Talk Back with Gary Nall, Sundays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. Another beautiful day, I hope, for most of you. Today, we're going to talk about the issues that are important to you. If you've been listening, I'm on 15 hours a week, live broadcasting. The long program is Wednesday mornings, starting on the East Coast at 3 a.m. and going to 9, West Coast midnight to 6. Each day, for those who are just coming on board, they'll have a chance to hear insights and information that are generally excluded from most of the radio programs and certainly almost all the television programs. Why? Because I don't find most of the media empowering. I don't find that they have patience, nor do I find that they have the insights to understand the issues and all the reasonable approaches we could take to resolving them. More often than not, what I see are partisan politics and bickering and spinning, people defending the merits of their particular ideology or belief. Or through someone else's eyes or some ideological eye, they have to see the world as they're told it is instead of seeing it for what it is. On this program, I try to make a difference by keeping independent of any special interest or any ideology and simply looking in just very practical, pragmatic, and common sense ways at the problems and the solutions. I set aside 1 hour a week, that's this one, for the people in the audience to call in and to make their points, ask questions, share comments, and then try to evolve responses that can impact all of us in a good way. And that's what this hour is for. So it's time to get on board. Give us a call now at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Now, while you're thinking about what you'd like to call in and speak about, let me share some insights with you. By the way, We are beginning tomorrow with what I'm calling the big pushback. We're pushing back against the FDA, against this administration and all previous administrations, against Big Pharma. It is time because for so long, the independent minds, scientists, activists, ethicists, philosophers, behavioralists, have not worked in a coordinated way. If you worked, you had to work either on the left or on the right. You had to work within the existing paradigms if you were in the environmental movement. And then you wake up one day and realize, my God, the environmental movement has sold us out. That's why it's time that we worked independent. Now, yes, there'll be those who say, but you can't possibly make a difference. They are right at one level, at one time. We can't make a difference as long as the Democrats and Republicans have control of the institutions and the hierarchy that controls those two parties. This week, we will explore, as you've never heard explored before, with methodical scholarship and detail, the entire hierarchy of the elite power brokers, who they are, what they do, how they control everything, the media, the parties, the campaigns, the laws. They control everything in life. And they even control the individual, unless a person wakes up and says no more. Well, tomorrow we start that pushback. So I hope that you pay attention this week because we're going to give you a lot of it. Let me just give you a little hint of what's coming. We're honoring Vaccine Injury Awareness Month. Every day we have new information on vaccines. We started a whole new website devoted exclusively to vaccine information. This comes from Cindy Sherman, who was responsible for this. And she said she's sending a letter from Dr. Paul King. By the way, Dr. King is a part of a major lawsuit that I'm also a plaintiff in against the FDA. That lawsuit was started over a year ago, and we're still in it, and it's still going. And when we have some outcome, I'll let you know. This is what it says. This is from Dr. Stephanie, Holloman Air Force Base, New Mexico. The Air Force is once again starting to pressure everyone to get the flu shot or the flu mist. They are giving the mist to employees. Parents have been told all along that flu shots are mandatory for entry into the child development centers and school-age programs. Nothing has been said to myself at this point, and I will keep you posted. They are currently sending out base-wide emails to personnel regarding shot clinics and who needs to get shots. And a thought out loud, don't they realize that by inoculating all the employees with the flu mist, that they are not only infecting everyone, inoculated with three strains of influenza, but because it is shed, meaning the flu viruses, for up to 21 days, spreading these three strains of influenza and any strains they might be transformed into by reassortment with any other compatible virus strain all over Holloman Air Base. That is, unless they quarantine every flu mist inoculated person away from all the other employees with pay for not less than 3 weeks, which, of course, they cannot afford to do. Hope that they understand they shouldn't be inoculating pregnant women. Perhaps our military leaders were once great strategic thinkers with great vision. However, dispensing flu mist vaccines is at best a bonehead move, and at worst might trigger a viral disease pandemic that could seriously cripple the base's operational readiness for weeks or months. Wouldn't want to be the base commander or any other senior staff members if that would happen. Hopefully, if you're taking about 6 to 10,000 international units of vitamin D, 3 a day, with probiotics right now, along with adequate amounts of vitamin A, mainly from your beta carotenes and some B vitamins and B12 and vitamins C and K and magnesium, potassium, phosphorus, boron, silicon, and molybdenum, that you will make yourself naturally immune. That's from Dr. Paul King and a communication from one of the doctors on one of the Air Force bases. Separately, industry front group gets taxpayer money to convince you to eat pesticide-laden foods. This is by Jill Richardson from Alternet. I'll quote this. Would you pay for a campaign to assure consumers that pesticide residues in their fruits and vegetables pose no harm to their health? Because whether you want to or not, you just have. The California Department of Food and Agriculture recently awarded $180,000 in federal grant funding to an organization called the Alliance for Food and Farming for a project titled Correcting Misconceptions About Pesticide Residues. The money came from the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Specialty Crop Block Grant Program, a grant program intended to, quote, enhance the competitiveness of the so-called specialty crops, fruits, vegetables, tree nuts, dried fruits, horticulture, and nursery crops. The Alliance for Food and Farming is a front group representing California's large produce growers and marketers and suppliers who sell them pesticides and fertilizer. Some of the member organizations, including the California Table Grape Association, Sunkist Growers, Produce Marketing Associates, these are all pro-pesticide groups. So what this means is that when you see a television commercial that tells you, eat your fruits and vegetables and don't be concerned about pesticides on food, there's no harm there, there's no proof. Well, half of that is correct. Eat your fruit and vegetables. The other half is wrong. Yes, there's an enormous amount, thousands of studies showing that there is no such thing as a safe pesticide, herbicide, or fungicide. But that's what happens when the special interest groups and their lobbyists end up writing the actual legislation and then saying that they get taxpayer money to go out there and promote it. All wrong. And finally, cell phones and cell towers. Are they transmitting death? Thank you, Mitchell Cohen, for sending this to me. I'll quote this from HealthWatch. There is danger and death lurking in Indian metros. If recent reports of the to Helka magazine are to be believed, almost four-fifths of Delhi's population is living amidst the dangerously potent electromagnetic radiations emitted from cell phone towers placed carelessly around residential areas of the city. A public interest survey on radiation was initiated by the group for the first time in India's capital of Delhi to investigate how telecom towers are jeopardizing citizens' lives by violating health norms. The study was commissioned by the newspaper, and 100 spots from around Delhi were selected for the study in the first half of May of this year. The results were very disturbing. Here are the highlights. About four-fifths of Delhi's population lives in unsafe radiation zones, with the radiation levels ranging from borderline to unsafe to extremely bad. 40 of the 100 hotspots have extreme anomaly levels of radiation. In these high-risk zones, the EMR is 700% above the safe limit. 31 spots were found to be unsafe zones, while 9 were borderline. Only a fifth of Delhi lives in or works in a safe or non-hazardous zone. Now, why is this important? Because last year I attended a rally, and I was one of the keynote speakers at a rally on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And the rally was to bring to the public's attention that on all these buildings all over Manhattan, in fact, in every community in America, you have cell towers. Most people don't recognize them. And sometimes they're very cleverly disguised. But those are what bring the satellite signals in. And that is a very powerful beam. And it pollutes with an electromagnetic radius about 300-meter radius of the towers. And that means that you could end up with all forms of chromosomal damage. And not only just in India, because you probably have more people using cell phones in India than any other place on Earth. The mobile phone is a device used ubiquitously among people of all class and ranks. It's being used by the fishmonger and the intellectual and the very young and the very old. And we all assume that it's not hazardous. Couldn't be. Our FDA wouldn't allow it. Well, that's not true. Dr. Ronald Heberman, director of University of Pittsburgh's Cancer Institute, has recently cautioned against the excess use of mobile phones by children in particular. And mobile phones, in fact, laptop computers, are low-power radio devices that transmit and receive signals. And through base station networks in the radio frequency range of 900 and 1800 megahertz. And mobile phones, your cell phone, has a radio transmitter which generates a radio energy of 1 to 2 watts, which is radiated through the antenna inside the phone. And if that's within 2 inches of your head, then it's being absorbed by your brain. And according to the International Commission for Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection, the sole established effect of radiation, which is a kind of a electromagnetic radiation exposure, is a rise in tissue temperature. But here's what happens when the tissue in your brain goes up. You have tissue damage. You have penetration to the blood-brain barrier. You have erratic neuromuscular functions, fatigue, poor concentration. Lenses in your eyes can become cataract, low sperm count. All these are due to this. A study conducted by doctors in southern Germany found that the health hazards of mobile phone radiation was substantially increasing their risk of cancer. And a comprehensive Swedish study established 240% risk of brain tumor in case of intense mobile phone use, and which is 2,000 hours per year. By the way, that's about 1 hour per day. Well, the question is, do you use your cell phone for 1 hour a day? Then you increase your risk of a brain tumor by 240%. A study by another group of Swedish researchers has established a link between long-term use of cell phones in children and children's leukemia. A recent pilot study on 20 rats by researchers in the Nehru University in Delhi has found that mobile phone radiation is damaging the DNA and causing all forms of problems. And an epidemiological study at Tel Aviv University showed 50% increase in parotid gland tumors. And the American Society of Reproductive Medicine found that the quality of semen was compromised significantly. And another study revealed pregnant women are at increased risk of giving birth defects to their child. And research conducted in the Human Genetic Department of Guru Nanak University has revealed that there is an increase in DNA and chromosomal damage on exposure to cell phone signals. And some studies have also pointed out a risk of acoustic neuroma and mouth cancers among habitual mobile phone users. Several cardiologists are of the opinion that patients with pacemakers and implantable cardiovascular defibrillators and impulse generators are also adversely affected. So I'm just giving you the news that every time you use your cell phone or your laptop, you're putting yourself at risk. And if you're a pregnant woman, you're really putting yourself at risk. And children, we're going to see, I believe, absolutely an epidemic. Millions upon millions of children are going to end up with brain tumors, jaw tumors, in the very near future, in the next 5 years, because of this. I'm Gary Noll. Now it's your time, and give us a call. We'd like to hear from you. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
One look at you, and it was plain to see you were my destiny.
With arms open wide, I threw away my pride. I'll sacrifice for you, dedicate my life to you. I'll go the way you lead.
Come on, baby.
Always there in time of need.
Oh, oh,
man,
when I
hit
the wheel, you'll be there to pick me up the hill.
There's no.
Program. I'm Gary Noll. Let's say hello to Kenny, or Kevin, from California. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Good.
Gary, I had a question about, this is for a woman in a different country. She has gone, she had breast cancer, and she has gone through chemotherapy and radiation. And she wants to know what she can do to improve, you know, her immune system after what she's gone through. Just to let you know that she doesn't my impression is she doesn't have access to many of the things we have here, like supplements or, you know, the type of juicing that we could do with the greens like kale and, you know, Swiss chard and all that stuff. She wouldn't have access to that. So what would you recommend she does to improve her health?
Where does she live?
In Iran.
Oh, okay.
And she's in her late 50s.
All right. Is she able to travel to the United States?
No.
Okay. All right, then my suggestion would be to send her vitamins that would be concentrations of the cruciferous nutrients. And you can get any number of compounds in supplemental form that now contain the greens, the cruciferous, broccoli sprouts, asparagus, collard greens, radishes, mustard. Over there, she certainly has garlic and onion, and that's
sure.
Good. High-dose vitamin C, I would send her. The fish oils would be very important, especially the omega EPA with DHA. One of the most important steps to take in helping with breast cancer, if you've had it, is just to start increasing your consumption of fruits and vegetables and beans and whole grains. Now, in Iran, they do have beans and grains and garlic, onions, and they do have root vegetables there. She has to increase the fiber to about 50 grams a day, but she must eliminate all meat and all cooked food especially the deep fried food. She could certainly have lightly cooked food, and assuming that she doesn't have access to a juice extractor, then send her over concentrated powders. Send her over any form of green and red concentrated powder. The more she gets that, the more it can help capture or trap the free radicals. Send her over the super antioxidants. Send her over, if I were sending her some stuff to help, I would send her concentrations, the high ORAC juice powders. And then send her anything that has broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, and also the phytochemical isolated from there known as indole-3-carbinol, I3C. Now, that helps turn the strong estrogen, estradiol, which could trigger additional cancer cell formation in her, into a weak estrogen, estradiol. And it'll also elevates the level of 2-hydroxyestrogen, or what is known as 2-OHE, another metabolite of estrogen, and inhibits the formation of 16-A-hydroxyestrogen, or 16-OHE. That's bad. Remember, 2 is good, 16 is bad. And that's just the easiest way of remembering that, because that could help send growth signals to a breast cancer cell. So the indole-3-carbinol is also capable of blocking the development of cancer cells and stimulating them to kill themselves. And the I3C is also a free radical inhibitor, which works especially well with radicals that are responsible for oxidation of fats. I would also, let me think something else, curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, that's an extract from the spice turmeric, which is very powerful in fighting breast cancer.
Sure. Can she have the turmeric itself?
Yes, she can, but she won't extract enough of it. This is an ingredient that is extracted and concentrated.
Okay.
It confuses the growth signals in the cancer cells and inhibits the development of new blood vessels into the tumor, what is called anti-angiogenesis. I would give her 900 milligram capsules 3 times a day. I would take her right up to 5 to 10,000 milligrams. And also a very good anti-angiogenesis agent is green tea. And so I would suggest maybe 2,000 milligrams of green tea a day. And it also helps prevent the cancer in the first place. But if you've had cancer, it helps prevent it from coming back. And a compound of beef and milk, conjugated linoleic acid, is essential for the transport of fat into cells. And it's believed to have protective property against metastasis, and that is not to take the beef or the milk, but rather the conjugated linoleic acid. Vitamin D is important. I would say 5,000 units a day, and coenzyme Q10, and coenzyme A, which is a crucial catalyst to utilize coenzyme Q10 twice a day. NADH, I would use 100 milligrams plus the mineral germanium, and DMG, dimethylglycine, and vitamin K2 at 5 milligrams a day. So those are some of the things, along with borage oil, primrose oil, and blackcurrant oil, that would be very helpful, and cat's claw would help her. And so get her started on that. That will certainly be a lot better than anything else she'd be doing, all right?
All right. Thank you very much, Gary.
All the best to you, Kevin.
Thank you.
And let's say hello to Jonathan from Brooklyn. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello, Gary.
How are you?
How's it going, Gary? Is it okay if I ask 2 questions?
Sure.
Okay. One question has to do with the mortgage crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, common mortgages have been securitized, and it breaks the legal chain so that when a bank comes to collect a mortgage, they don't have a legal chain of, because they securitized the mortgage, and the mortgage is no longer there. And it's caused a great crisis so far. The Bank of America has suspended all foreclosures at this point. There's also been, since the banks don't have the mortgages to collect, they actually been falsifying the mortgages. And there's a lot of fraud going on also. And I was just wondering if you had any comments about this whole situation. And the
sure.
Second question is, how do you know if there's any negative energy in a home or apartment, and what do you do about it?
All right. Well, the second question is very easy. There are simple handheld meters that measure the amount of electromagnetic pulses. You can take it around your board on the bottom, your baseboard, to see if any of the wiring inside is causing that. You can take it over each appliance from a hairdryer, put it on, watch it go up. A microwave oven, the clock beside your bed, your television, your computer, your cell phone, and the room itself. And then it will show you, excuse me, the range that is considered low end, medium, and high end, in which case then you can see where there are hot spots in your particular living area. And some of those are very easy to remedy. Simply remove that particular item from your presence or keep it far enough away. If you keep at least 8 feet from a television, you reduce by 95% the electromagnetic pulse that would hit you, depending upon the size of the television. But for most people, for a 47 to a 52-inch screen, 8 feet diminishes it by about 95%. Now, to the other question, which is a more arcane question in our current body politic, you would assume that in a democracy that there is one set of laws. We've been told we are a nation of laws, not men. That is not true. You will see this will be a perfect example. They will say that, yes, we should all live by the same laws. If you, Jonathan, were to do an affidavit, in effect, is a document that you're attesting to the best of your knowledge that what you're saying is relevant and accurate as you know it. And that's why an affidavit is allowed to be entered into testimony, evidence into a court. And you have to get it in front of a notary public. It has to be signed and notarized. And in effect, you're swearing that what you're saying is true. If you lie and you're caught lying, then it's perjury. And you can be held accountable based upon the statutes in each state. There are federal statutes and there are state statutes. Now, here is the problem. That's in an Alice in Wonderland world. In the Kafka world we live in, there are always multiple levels of reality. If you did something wrong, you will be held fully accountable. If a corporation does something wrong, it will not. If you went out on the street and decided to drive with a blindfold on and kill people, you'll go to prison for life. If a corporation makes a drug like Vioxx, knowing in advance that it would increase their risk of heart attacks and strokes, and it does, and they kill over 55,000 people, or as many that was killed in the entire Vietnam War, they will not go to jail. Their stock price will go up. The head of the company will get a bonus, and they'll pay a $5.85 billion fine, and everybody's happy, except, of course, the people who died and their families and 100,000 who had heart attacks and strokes and didn't die. Nothing will happen negative to them. So understand, nothing is honest or real in the United States today at the institutional level. It is all a series of half-truths and deceptions. So here's what the likely outcome of this will be. You're told it's in the fine print. And then now the bank has found that it has not honored its own fine print. One guy was signing 10,000 mortgages and attesting to them by affidavit. And indeed, he had not done any homework. He hadn't done any due diligence. He hadn't proven anything at all, which meant that he lied. No one will be held accountable. In fact, if every person during the bubble who gave a liar's loan and worked with a person in intentionally lying about their income, so you make $30,000 a year, but you want a $500,000 home, no problem. The mortgage broker will lie for you. The appraiser doing the home will lie for you. The bank who is giving this mortgage will lie for you. The people on Wall Street who took those mortgages and slice them and put them into securitized loans will lie. The triple-rated agencies will say this is a triple-A-rated, completely secure, and completely trustworthy group of investments. They lie. And the people selling these to others in other countries will lie. If you took everyone who was directly responsible for lying and breaking the law, you would have at least 2 million people to 4 million people in prison. You would double our prison population overnight. So it's not going to happen. So if enough people commit a crime, it's no longer a crime. It's simply a misunderstanding. That's how it works. No, I'm not finished yet. Don't ask a question and interrupt me, John.
Okay.
If, for example, we see the miners down in South America who now have a chance to have freedom from that captivity, the whole energy will be on freeing the miners. What we will not look at is each day how many miners go into unsafe mines where they're at risk not just of a mine collapse, but also of the occupational danger of breathing in the dust from the mines. We will look at one child that has fallen into a drain system, and the world holds its breath while everybody's focus on rescuing that child. But 27,000 other children died of preventable diseases from contaminated water and malnutrition every single day. We can't focus upon 27,000 children dying. It can't fit into our subconscious. One child can. We can't understand what it would be like to live in Baghdad where you have electricity 1 to 2 hours a day if you're lucky, where you have completely polluted water since our invasion, where you can't send your kid to school because the danger is too great, and you also have to be careful about any markets because they're targets of terrorist attack. So you eat what you can get on the black market and or from a farmer's market, but your life is a living hell. It's just a series of excessive adaptations. But because the families are large, enough people are making sacrifices that they pull together and they're able to do it. An American family would absolutely go nuts if they had to spend 1 month in Baghdad living as a normal, educated Baghdad citizen lives. If an American doctor and their family had to give up everything they have and take the place of a person who's a physician living in Baghdad, where the doctor goes into a hospital and has to amputate without anesthesia, where they have simple conditions that become chronic or become deadly because they don't have the medications to treat them, and always working under absolute fear. We're unprepared for that. So what we do is we simply don't look at any of it, none of it at all. We'll only look at one person. 60 Minutes will focus on one physician in Baghdad who is making a difference, and that we can fit into our mind. That's easy to understand. My report on explaining how cell phone use for 1 hour a day increases your risk of brain cancer by 240% is simply unfathomable. We can't comprehend that. Why? Because it doesn't fit our reality. We use cell phones more than that. So if we're using a cell phone 2 or 3 hours a day, or a computer 2 or 3 hours a day, like a laptop, and we realize we just increase our risk of cancer of the brain by 600%, we're not going to process it. We're simply going to deny it. So we deny ourselves. The conservatives for decades have denied that they are complicit in allowing the elitist to control the world, and all the while saying we want smaller government, and all the while creating the largest governmental infrastructure in history. They created the balloon of a gigantic series of bureaucracies. They did. And then they blamed the Democrats for wanting socialism. There's never been socialism in the United States as massive as the socialism where we, the American people, from our meager earnings, give major corporations like the pharmaceutical industry, the energy cartels, the military-industrial complex, the educational system. We give these massive groups the largest single amount of money, which is socialism for the rich is considered a necessity and good business. Socialism for the poor is considered irresponsible. We can't wrap our minds around it. If you're a conservative and you're a Republican, you can't wrap your mind around the idea that you're the cause of the problem and you're clueless about solutions. All you know is that you are willing to give away any right, constitutional right, in order to win against the war on terrorism. Yet never once have you asked for the details of exactly how you're going about winning this war. Never once. Because there are no ways of winning it. You can't win the war on terrorism. But in the process, it's very good in order to take away our rights. Yesterday, there was a student, 20-year-old student in California at the University of Berkeley, who's got his car fixed. And the person fixing the car noticed there was a little antenna and got down there and took it out. It was an FBI tracking device. And when the guy put pictures of it up on the Internet, suddenly the FBI showed up wanting his very expensive tracking device back. Wouldn't tell the person what he was a suspect for. You know, he's a Egyptian-American, has no problems, and has no association with any radical groups. But clearly he's on someone's profile list. And yet they won't tell you when you're on a profile list. If you find out, they won't tell you why, and you can't get off. But no one will say that this is a right-wing fascist philosophy, that you do not compromise ever when it comes to meting out waterboarding, torture, prison for anyone, catch a kid smoking marijuana, throw them in jail for life. If they get gang raped, so be it. If you're a Republican, that gives you some form of perverse and sick sexual arousal. But that's the Republicans. They're sick. They're very sick little people, as are the conservatives, because they have nothing that is legitimate. Their arguments are completely, you could tear through any argument by any of these idiots in a heartbeat. And then they align themselves with people who are below moronic, like Sarah Palin or all the other candidates, that those in the Tea Party movement, unfortunately, who have allowed themselves just to be as fascistic and stupid as the Republicans are and the conservatives, because none of it is honest. None of it. Nothing they say is honest. Did they demand to know who got the TARP payments? No. Did they demand that when they were in power, that the interest rate be raised so they would stop the balloon? And because the balloon, the bubble, a real estate bubble, was created under Alan Greenspan. And when Bush got into office, hey, the lower the interest rates, the better it was if you were wanting something you couldn't afford and hoping that everything would keep going up. And the conservatives continue to sponsor that because they got to take credit for, look at how the economy is growing. But it's a debt-based economy. It's not a zero sum gain. But that's how they factor it in their mind. On the other side of it, of course, are the Democrats. And they're as dumb as a brick. They're embarrassing how dumb they are. And yet these are the people who think they know the right way. They abandon the unions, and the heads of the unions, in my opinion, should all be fired. You know, there might be one exception, but my God, the unions have turned against their own members and are not working in the interest of what at one time was a high ideal. And then you have everybody wants what's good for them. Screw everyone else. If you're in a group that's managed to get political power, and you can use that political power, then don't have any reform in election campaigning, because then suddenly you wouldn't have the same power to control the outcome of an election. And by controlling the outcome of the election, you get your raises, you get your pensions, you get what you need. So if we had a level playing field in a real democracy, then we wouldn't have any campaign money coming from any private source. It would all be public. But neither party wants that, because the moment they acknowledge that real campaign reform means that you have one term only, that you have 100% public financing, that everybody has the same equal chance to run for any office, then you couldn't buy the mayorship as Bloomberg did, or the governorship as Christy Whitman's trying to do, or others. And that's why the presidents we have now, and the senators we have, and the congresspersons we have, House of Representatives have, and the governors, they're all grossly compromised individuals. Even if at one point they may have had some higher ideal, it is morphed into what's good for me is good for me, and I'll try to make you believe it's good for you. So they say, let's get more public spending. Let me just give you one example. I'll just show you how stupid people really are. And this is where neither the Democrats or Republicans get this right. The Democrats will say, we don't want to see Christie approve a $8 billion public works infrastructure, tunnel, bridge. It'll just be a waste. The Democrats say that's the best thing we can do because it'll put people to work. They're both wrong. Why? Because we do not have any sense of authentic independent scholarship left in America today in any of the major institutions. We certainly have a lot of good scholars. We have a lot of smart people. But they're not in these institutions. To go in these institutions, you have to be grossly compromised because you can't stay in them. Then you'd be a whistleblower. Here's the reality. Let's say you get $8 billion to build a bridge or a tunnel or any of this. Who gets that money? All the people who are politically connected with their groups get the money. How many people are hired? Well, $555 million went to New York out of the original stimulus plan, and less than 55 people were hired. And that seems obscene. But the money goes to corporations. So now you have Corporation X that has got all these lobbyists. And these lobbyists are either state or federal lobbyists. And they'll go in and make sure that their company gets the bid. So they give $1 billion to this major corporation to do this work. 80% of that stays within the company as profits. A small number of subcontractors will be hired, and a small number of laborers will be hired, and in all probability, the $8 billion will become $16 billion because they don't do a normal, I will do this within budget and on time, or I'll face a penalty. Instead, they do what is known as cost plus. So it doesn't matter how long they take, they're going to get money plus anything else that comes along as additional expenses they're reimbursed for, and they play magical bookkeeping. So now you spend $8 billion and you have a paltry number of jobs, and the average person couldn't qualify for these jobs because they're going to be very specific construction jobs. So then you'll get the people who are in line, who are politically connected within in those guilds, to get some of their members working. But outside of that, the average person is not going to benefit, but we'll all be paying the expenses for it. That's what happens with all these major contracts. The stimulus package is a fraud because it does not stimulate a sustainable economy. So all these are lies, but they lie on the left and they lie on the right. They lie from a Democrat and a Republican and a conservative ideology. They're not looking at how would you solve the problem as an independent. Well, let me give you a different rationale. Here's what I would do in New Jersey. I would simply put up a lottery. And the lottery would be that the state of New Jersey would give interest-free loans and tax-free loans, tax-free lottery for the first 3 years. You pay no taxes of any kind. And as a corporation, and you pay no interest and no money back for 3 years. In return, for every $1 million that you get, up to $5 million, you have to hire two employees and pay them a salary of $30 an hour, which is a living wage. And then you have independent panels who then are able to oversee the area of a small business. So let's say your business was a restaurant, or it was a dry cleaner, or a car wash. You would have people who have had specifically experience in that area, not bureaucrats who are idiots at everything. They can do nothing in the real world. Wonderful to work for the government because you never have to use your brain, ever. And they screw up everything. But look at people who live in the real world. And you'll see people would say, all right, let's take a look. And then you bring each of these people in, and then you interview them, and you question them, and then you look at their data, and they have to do a good presentation and show you that it's cost-effective and it has a chance of surviving. And now you have maybe 10,000, 50,000, 100,000 new businesses in the state of New Jersey. The employees pay taxes. They'll pay their local taxes and state taxes, federal taxes, and now they're gainfully employed, not, you know, employed at minimal wage or exploitative labor. and they have a chance to allow something to be created that can be used by the residents and citizens of New Jersey or exported. That would be an intelligent way of doing it, but we don't do it that way. Instead, we throw enormous amounts of money, and the Democrats love to do that. They're so reckless, so irresponsible, as if all we have to do is build a gigantic bureaucracy, whether it's a housing complex, and it'll just work fine until it stops working fine because everything we have today is built with building corruption. Look at New York State. Look at Hevesy and the rest of these leases. All of Albany is corrupt. All of New Jersey is corrupt. Everything and everybody going to that table is corrupt. So you need to get out of that cycle. And the only way you can get out of the cycle is to recognize that the people in that cycle are not going to do the right thing. Now, to go back to your original question, so what does it mean? What it means is this. I predict, and remember this show, that Barack Obama will come together with head of the Federal Reserve, and he'll come together with virtually all of the major people on Wall Street, Securities and Exchange Commission, and Secretary of the Treasury, and he will say something like this. Here's the speech he will give specifically on this. We all want to see the economy get better. We want to see people keep their homes. We want to see those who can afford to live in their homes do so. We also believe that it is fair if you've been doing your best to make your mortgage payments that you be acknowledged for having made your payments. And how does that look when you're making your payments every month and it's hard for you, but your next door neighbor realizes that through a technicality, they don't have to pay their mortgage anymore and they can't be thrown out? That then suddenly means that everyone is going to be looking for a way to game the system. And that would simply collapse the entire housing system. Right now, Freddie and Fannie are backing 90% of these mortgages. So the reality is that even though there are technical glitches, these people defaulted on their mortgages. We set up a program to help these people. We spent over $1.6 billion set aside to help keep people in their homes, but even that didn't work. So what we're going to do, working with the Attorney General and working with all these different departments, we have decided that in the common interest, Congress has passed in a bipartisan way. Here are the Republicans and Democrats coming together, Charles Schumer, and they're all here agreeing that we have to go forward. Yes, mistakes were made. Yes, they should have been held accountable, and that's unfortunate. But we can't have 3 million people living in homes that they can't afford. And if we give these homes back to the mortgage holders, the banks or the trusts or the investment groups, they can then bring these homes back out onto the market at maybe half the price that they are now, which means that people who wanted a home and could have afforded a home if the price came down now will have a chance to have a home and be able to live in it and pay their bills and help that society. So we believe it's in the common interest of everyone not to look politically at taking advantage of someone. It's not one of those gotcha moments. So that's what we are doing. And by executive order, I am decreeing today that we are not holding anyone personally accountable, any bank, any lending institution, any Wall Street firm, for this problem. The delinquencies, therefore, will continue. The people who are in foreclosure will be foreclosed on. And we will then put these properties back into the market. Yes, we're holding 4.8 million foreclosed homes because if they were all brought back into the market at once, the housing market would collapse at least another 20 to 50% from where it's at now. That's what I predict he will do. I absolutely do not see any way in the world that anyone will be held accountable because on the other end, a lot of big banks who've already been bailed out would have to be bailed out again. The amount that he would have to bring in would be about $500 billion for the same banks that he already helped. And these are the same banks that threw people out after getting the money. So imagine what kind of pill that would be to swallow for the president to say, now, I realize that, you know, we helped these people out and we gave them a lot of money. I mean, we've guaranteed almost $3 trillion to these people, but this is one more pill we have to take. We got to get through this time. We got to keep looking forward. Don't look back. You know, and we don't want these banks failing, because if they don't have any money coming in and then no one's going to buy a mortgage they can't own, and people are not going to be able to get any money on their mortgage, then all these investment groups and all these banks are going to have a liquidity crisis. They're not going to have any cash left. So we can't let Bank America, we can't let Citigroup, and we can't let Wells Fargo, we can't let these banks down at this moment. That would just be unpatriotic. So we're coming together, once again, bipartisan, and we're going to help them out. We're going to give them $500 billion, and that's going to help rescue them. And also we're going to have to give Freddie and Fannie, to guarantee them, we're going to have to give them $500 billion also. And someone's going to say, but hold on a second. You're helping the banks again. Wouldn't it be more realistic for the banks just to bring the cost of a mortgage down to what the market value is? So if a person bought a home at $400,000 thinking it was going to go up and it went down to $200,000 and they're paying their mortgage on $400,000, they're underwater, they're never going to get out from it, so they're foreclosed, why don't you bring it down to $200,000 and let them have a chance to stay in their home? Well, that's reasonable. Now, you're dealing in politics, so don't start invoking anything as reasonable into the body politic. We never do anything that is reasonable. We make compromises. Our body politic today in America is 100% compromised. Everything is compromised. So that's what's going to happen. No one's going to be held accountable. No one will be allowed to stay in their homes. They'll all be thrown out. There will be some attorneys who will argue that they're going to take this up to Supreme Court, because the banks can't show they actually own the mortgage, and without owning the mortgage, and you can't throw someone out for not paying you the mortgage. You know, that won't work. No, so they're going to short end all this, and that's why they're taking this little holiday of stopping foreclosures. That'll all end when they agree that they'll come forward with unified voice, the left and the right, and to do this. And at some point, Americans will realize, stop buying homes, Jesus. It's not an American dream. It's a fraud. Hope that answers your question. Let's say hello to... let's see who we have here. Sandy from Long Island. Sandy, are you on the line there?
Hello, Gary.
Hi.
Hi. Please tell us, what do you eat every... As a strict vegan, what do you eat every day? On an everyday basis?
Well, first you have to find people with very green lawns. Sandy, what I eat each day is I start my day. I only tell you some of what. I won't tell you the amount of what I do, but I'll tell you some of the things I do. I start with my super muscle, and then I do my workout. After the workout, I generally have watermelon, and to rehydrate the electrolytes that I've used in my workout. And then I make myself a what I like to call my rejuvenation drink. I put into a blender, and I won't tell you how much because I don't want other people duplicating it, but I put a lot of green stuff, greens and grains, berry blast, red stuff, the Advanced Supremacy, Super Muscle again, and then coconut oil and flaxseed oil. And I blend that up, and I drink that. And then that's good to go for about 5 hours. Then I have a giant salad. And I like to change the salad each day to have a variety of vegetables in it and exotics. And, water chestnuts and heart's palm and olives. I love different types of olives, so I'll do all that. And also to make a little pate in the middle of the salad, where you can have sun-dried tomatoes spiced in different ways, and using different salad dressings. And I like to make my own fresh salad dressings. Like today, I made myself I took some peach, and I blended peach with olive oil and basil, fresh basil, peach, and a little apple cider vinegar and lemon juice and water, and I blended that up, and it gives a nice salty taste without having the salt, and makes a great salad dressing. And salad dressing generally lasts 3 days, and then I'll change and make some other kind of salad dressing. And then I'll have a whole grain and beans, and I mix, I have those, and different combinations, so they're exciting or interesting. I don't just like eating some brown rice. I might make brown rice and then blend in some sautéed garlic and onion shallots and different herbs and seasonings, and maybe dry roast a little bit of pine nuts and put some pine nuts on there with gamoco, and then stuff in that into some olive leaves, and then let that marinate. It's delicious. Or you can stuff an artichoke, or you can stuff a pepper, you can stuff mushrooms, and you can put some vegan cheese on it, let it lightly melt over. That's just an example of breakfast and lunch, and I eat very, very little for dinner. I love soups, all different types of soups, or a light pasta, and I always have rejuvenating nutrients in it. I always use power foods, anywhere from 5 to 20 different power foods in a given meal. And that maximizes the enzymes, phytonutrients, antioxidants, and healing nutrients that the body requires. So I put those in. Okay. All the best to you, Sandy. By the way, sometime in the next 6 months, I will be bringing out my new cookbook, a vegan cookbook with over 400 gourmet recipes, but I'm doing it differently. I photographed everything, so it's going to be a photo book. Beautiful gourmet recipes and a lot of raw recipes as well. And let's say hello to Kenny from New Jersey. Hi, Kenny.
How you doing, Gary?
Doing great, Kenny.
Okay. Well, the reason why I'm calling is because the other day, you had posed a question, put the question out there, what can we do good as far as the, you know, today's educational system is concerned. You said you didn't want to hear whiners or complainers. You said, let's bring in some positive input. Well, since I heard that show, my wife's an educator in New Jersey, and I was asking her, I said, well, I'm not an educator. I'm not in the system. You know, let's try and think of some things. And the more we talk about it, the more we say, if you compare it to, say, you know, if a doctor is unhappy with how he's treating his patients, well, the best way he could affect what's going on, from what we could tell, is to step out of the paradigm and become a holistic healer, a holistic doctor. Or let's say you're not happy with anything that's going on in the world. One thing you could do as an individual is, you know, eat vegan and everything else. But as far as being a school teacher, where everything seems to be messed up on every level, from the parents all the way to the politicians and everything, we're trying to figure out, what can one teacher do as an individual when she's part of the paradigm without having to leave it?
It's simple. You can become a life coach majoring in educational issues. You could be a life coach majoring in health issues. You could be a life coach majoring in relationship issues, or a life coach majoring in financial issues. You pick your specialty, and therefore you advertise yourself as a person who is a licensed, qualified teacher with a lot of experience, but who is also holistic, and then list the different areas that you believe you could teach a person at home or on a tutorial basis to help them, a student who's having difficulty. That's how I would approach it.
Okay, so would you say that really the bottom line as far as the system is concerned,
the whole teacher system right now is being challenged, and it's too rigidified to change, and therefore they'll focus upon the charter schools and the for-profit schools, which are not any better than the public schools, but they are more profitable for the people who are investing and less costly for the people who are controlling the budget without the union interference and the protections a teacher has. So what you're going to have now is you're going to have a battle between these two forces, and depending upon who gets in office, if the Republicans take over, then they will see that the educational system is eviscerated. They'll probably eliminate the Department of Education altogether. And in which case, then, there's going to be an enormous opportunity for people who are independent. I believe that's also good for a physician. I counsel medical doctors all the time who are afraid of coming out of the closet because they know that they would get challenged. They go up on a quack list and for offering some form of nutritional counseling with their medical practice. So they want to do it secretly. And I say, well, then just become a medical doctor, life coach, offering alternative approaches to medicine. And so that is going to be the future. That way a person can still work in what they love doing, but control over it so they're not having to be held accountable to the unions that are so corrupt today across the board. I'm pro-union, and I'm just saying that unions, the people, the members of the union should be looking very honestly at how their unions are run and just change it, reform the unions. Well, reforming the unions will go down about as successful as reforming the Democratic Republican Party, so it's not going to happen. So then you say, all right, if the institutions I have been a part of are not working as they should as an ideal, then what can I do as an individual? And then you start realizing you have more power as an individual, but you also have more risks because then you're stepping out of the system, taking what you've learned and your skills, but you're surrendering your security and in order to do that. And a lot of people in academia, they love to get tenure because then, unless they do something really egregious, they can't be fired. But then again, look at all these public employees. Public employees couldn't be, if they can't be fired. Once you're in that civil service, that's the most corrupt union of all. You can't be fired unless you do something that goes over the top. You get gigantic pensions. All this has to stop, and it is going to stop. If the Democrats were smart, they would actually want reform of their base institutions, but they won't touch that. And they should, because if they don't, there's an enormous amount of people out there that they're condescending to and dismissive of who's going to force change. And then you're not going to have any control over how you can change things. You'll be on the outside. It'll take 6 years, but 6 years from now, you'll see a completely different political landscape. We're out of time. Thank you, Kenny.
Thank you.
And now, coming up in just a moment, just after our music, and we're going to go over to Michael Rupert for his program, The Lifeboat Hour. Have a nice day, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow.